they shrunk down the size of every page. And for a guy over 70 years of age, some of those diagrams are now hard to read without a magnifying glass. Over to you, Glenn.
And what happened was I started reading the reviews on the books, and what happened was I figured I would get a hold of the third edition is probably the one that's probably the most available. And at the prices I saw on eBay, I was like, you know what the heck, I'm just going to go out and get all four of them. But the hardest one to actually get a hold of was the first edition. Yeah, I wound up getting them all. And so far, I haven't had enough time to go through all of them yet, but they're a good read, for sure. Okay, so and this way too, Dick, when we discuss now, we can be on the same page. I can use the same lingo now. KTRQIQ.
Don't forget now that this antenna knowledge, it's a black art. When you get real good at it, you've got to make a Faustian bargain. When it comes to the Antenna Engineering Handbook, the second edition is a lot better than the first. The third edition is a lot better than the second. The fourth edition is the best of them all, but it's hard to read because everything's been squozed down. Don't worry about getting the first edition. The first edition is it's been updated so many times. Particularly the slotted antenna section has been expanded so much more in the later editions. Other than the fact that it's a classic, the JASIC book, the very first edition, I wouldn't turn the world upside down trying to get that one, Glenn. The later editions of Antenna Engineering Handbook, in my mind, are a lot more valuable. Over to you, Glenn.
Dick, actually, I've got all four now. I have all four plus the first edition Krauss book. But it was nice because when getting them, you know, now I've got to read them all. So I made it through about a third of the second edition so far. And it's quite good, you know. But the Krauss book, the antenna book, that one takes a little bit more time. You know, the one part that I really enjoyed about the Krauss book so far is the one part when you would talk about antenna apertures, a lot of that, I kind of knew what you were talking about, but now I have to look at the Krauss book and they discuss exactly and they give the math behind the apertures. Now I know exactly what you're talking about. So, see, this is putting me back on the same page. So it's going to be a good read.
Yeah, from Krauss's first book, McGraw-Hill 1950, you'll find out antenna has area. Five different kinds of area are associated with an antenna. Loss area, capture area, and so on, in various combinations. So, five different kinds of area. Boy, do antennas have area. Bye-bye, you all. See you guys next week. And we're going to settle all these issues next week. We just won't mention which issues we're going to settle. K2IW, clear but listening.
7-3, gentlemen. Enjoy.
I think I sent you email with all of the links that I was talking about. Interesting is when you look at that electron lattice and tertiary.
Okay.
I think I'm going to send you also my pictures of my cryo cooler, the 4 Kelvin. Thank you very much.
8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Listening. tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater.
Time is 5 a.m. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL amateur radio repeater system.
Friday night was my department. I'm looking around. Mark and Barbara were conspicuously absent, and then we all found out why.
Ah, yes. Well, you know, these are all those life cycle events they talk about, and I went through it, and, you know, my wife's parents are still with us and going strong. They're down in Florida. But, you know, these are the things that happen, I guess. So, not too much else to say about it. I'll check out what's going on, and we will make the appropriate actions.
Okay, not the topic I wanted to start Monday morning with, but I figured since you know them, you might want to know about this.
Yeah, Roger, thanks a lot for letting me know. I, you know, now that I'm not in that medical park anymore, and, you know, sometimes I go to Stony Brook to give a lecture now and then, but other than that, I'm not there that often either. I'm kind of out of that loop, so I don't get all the news. Anyway, just heading now, well, I don't know where I am, somewhere on the northern states. There was a report of a an MVA off the side of the road on the eastbound side at Post Road, but hopefully that won't bother us much.
I don't get on to the northern state until after that. I get on at the Meadowbrook. And I'm chugging away in the four-laner right now.
Well, everybody, I thought I was an early riser, but you guys make me look like a slacker. I don't know. I also heard John N2EB sign on earlier this morning, but wasn't able to get back to him. So I don't know if he's already at work, or maybe we'll catch him on the air if he's listening.
He's probably already parked. Get him very early or you don't get him at all.
WV2MSD. So, Gary, you know much about SWR meters and antenna tuners?
SWR meters, a little bit. Antenna tuners, zero. I'm strictly UHF, VHF. I have only a tech. I never upgraded to the general.
Okay. Yeah, I began to realize that I'm in a little trouble when I have to start getting my technical information from YouTube.
Why not? They got everything else on there.
You know, you're not kidding. My wife, for some reason, I don't know why, picked up knitting. Our neighbor is a big knitter. And she set her up with some knitting needles and some yarn and showed her what to do, but somehow she ended up not remembering how to do it. So last night, she and I are sitting there watching YouTube demonstrations of how to knit, which, I don't know, I probably shouldn't admit that on the air, but that's what I was doing last night.
Nothing wrong with that. Hopefully, when she knits a sweater for you, she gets the sleeves the right length and not long enough that it would be one sleeve for an orangutan and one sleeve for a chipmunk.
Well, in my case, she can just use a fire plug as a form and it'll probably fit me fine.
Okay. Little head, little arms, big body, huh?
I'm afraid so, but, you know, I'm still trying to work on that. Hopefully with the summer I'll be able to get out and get a little more exercise, drop the weight, you know. That seems to be the annual goal, but I'm blessed with a wife that likes to cook, so that doesn't help.
I know the feeling. But I have been eating less and less and less. It's gotten to the point when we go out to dinner, it is rare that I finish my entire meal.
Well, you can start doing what my parents used to do, you know, go out, order one dish and split it, and then bring home the leftovers.
Uh, not enough for the two of us to split, because my wife still has a healthy appetite. But, you know, when you go to these restaurants, they give you big portions. I don't finish it anymore. And I've gotten to the point where I'm saying it's not worth stuffing.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to work on that, because I still, sometimes I'm lacking an off switch. But anyway, the question I had to do with using an automatic tuner and an SWR meter on a manual in series, so you can use the meter on one to read it. But I tried that, and it's not behaving the way I thought it would, but doesn't seem to be affecting anything, so... I tried to look it up on YouTube. I just got a bunch of various videos, which were fun to watch. I don't know. I've never done a YouTube video for anything, but these guys must have a lot of time on their hands, and they seem to really enjoy being on the camera, so I guess it's good. I did watch one that showed me how to change the water pump on a Jeep engine, which let me know that I was severely overcharged by the mechanic.
It all depends upon what you consider your hourly rate for your labor. And even though we're both professionals, the mechanics and the plumbers get a higher hourly rate than we do.
Ah, yes. Well, you know, it's all necessary work. But when I used to have a boat in the old days when the kids were little, I started out by using a mechanic for everything, and when I realized how expensive it was, I tried doing some things myself. And sometimes it worked, and sometimes I ended up having to call a guy to come and fix what I tried to fix. But, you know, you learn a lot. I did learn a lot in those years about engines and stuff like that that I didn't know before. The electrical I could handle, but the engines were a little bit of a mystery, especially on the boat when it came to things like heat exchangers and sacrificial zincs and things like that.
There was another station in there. I got just a little bit of it. Yeah, there's a couple old jokes about mechanics and things like that. The one that's really appropriate, you call the mechanic, and he says, well, my labor rate, I have three different labor rates. Labor rate number one is if you just call me, I do the job. Labor rate number two, it's higher, that's if you watch me while I do the job. Labor rate number three, which is the highest, is if you attempt to fix it, then call me to fix what you fix. Leave a pause, because there was a station underneath you.
God, you couldn't hear that?
My God.
As it should be, tradespeople get paid more than professionals. Enter BPN Mobile, in the four-laner.
And a good morning to you, WB2MSB.
Morning, Richie, N2ZEP.
Don't sacrifice the zinc, sacrifice the chicken.
You'll be happy to know I still have my my union card from the International Brotherhood of Theatrical Electricians.
Local 1?
Oh, it was Local 383, which was in Washington, D.C., when I had a job as a projectionist in a questionable theater while I was in college.
The kind of theater that they used to have to mop up the floor quite often.
Well, it was a U and 18th Street, and you can look it up. Back in the 70s, U and 18th Street was kind of like the old 42nd Street.
All I could say is, ew.
And I was lucky. They had just switched over to projectors that used actual bulbs instead of those carbon sticks, so I didn't have to get messy with those. Gary, are you still there?
I'm here. I remember those carbon arc lamps.
We're buried in my garage. I have a transformer for one of those.
All we need now is to find the film, and we can have a party.
I still have, I think I still have all my father's 8mm stuff, including his camera. But, made an awesome Jacob's ladder. Is there anything that isn't buried in that garage of yours? There's probably even a few dead bodies. Just have to watch out for that 55-gallon drum in the crawl space. Both of you should beware that right opposite Creedmoor Amateur Radio Club, where they serve, Richie, they have screens on the windows to keep the squirrels from eating the nuts, and they serve the soup. There is a major brake check. I'm down to 5 miles an hour. Does that not surprise me?
Net tonight at 8:30 WQVL repeater system.
No, neither one of you watch vinyl. No, I don't watch vinyl. Sometimes I listen to vinyl. Rich, when you had mentioned vinyl a few weeks ago, I happened to catch a couple of, I guess, what you'd call trailers while I was watching TV, and it looked a little bit too racy for me. I probably wouldn't be able to tolerate it in my mind. Okay. Well, listen, I guess not everybody can handle seeing Olivia Wilde fully naked. What channel was that on? That piqued his interest. On HBO. Oh, well, in that case, I'm glad I fell for the sales pitch when I tried to drop it to get my cable rates down. It's not TV. It's HBO. Brings back memories of when he was a projectionist. So I can't wait to see what wonders they have in store for me. They had me up on a rooftop on Friday in the sleety snowy rain trying to work, and I just couldn't do it. Well, that's just not right. You shouldn't have to deal with that, you know, this late into April. We have to complain to somebody. I'm complaining to you and to PPN. I'm waiting to see what's going to happen. I was given the warning by my dragon lady last week that she was planning on taking a couple of days off. I'm hoping she starts today and continues for Thursday. As long as the weather holds, it's looking like next weekend's going to be in pleasant weather-wise, because I got to take a trip to Providence, Rhode Island. That's a nice little town, especially if you like lawn stuff. Is that a college trip or for work? It's a trip. Gonna go check it out at Johnson and Wales. Okay, found the trouble. There are 3 or 4 cars parked in a flatbed in the left lane, of course. Once you get past it, everything opens up wide. Down by the Jose Cuervo, or what? Between the Cross Island and the Clearview. Uh-huh. Yes, we're going to check out what they do for transfer students. Daughter is looking to do a little transfer action. So she's coming down and we're going to go take a trip out there. She's got a whole tour booked. And I'll just go along for the ride to get some lobster. So tell me, what is her major? She is baking and pastry with a side order of Bachelor's of Business Administration and Culinary Arts.
we have a cupcake situation pending, so I would definitely encourage that. Johnson & Wales, I think, is probably a pretty good choice, and Providence, I've been there many times, is a pretty cool town. I think she'll like it. I do have a little factoid about Providence, if you're interested.
I have one about Rhode Island. It's called Left Turn Yield. What's your little factoid?
So in the original Superman serial, the not the movie serial, the one on TV, you know, with George Reeves, and the city that the Daily Planet was in when they showed the skyline and they showed the building that the Daily Planet was, that was in Providence, Rhode Island.
That's where they did the exteriors for George Reeves' Superman.
Well, it may be an urban myth, but that's what I was always told, and I sort of believe it.
Sure, why not? So, I'll check it out when I'm there. I'll see if I recognize any of the buildings as the Daily Planet.
And the other factoid that you might like is that the Little Rascals episodes were filmed in Utica, New York. That dark, dank, dingy city that they filled it in was Utica, which is very believable, I think.
Having been to Utica many times, I fully concur that, yes, it could have been Utica, without a doubt. It also could have been lots of other places.
Leaving some room to see if Gary's going to come back in. Are you in the bridge already there, sir?
No, I'm not. I'm in the trench, but I had nothing to add to the conversation. So I let you guys converse.
Crabtree, I have something heavy on my heart. I'm toying with sketching. I don't know what I'm going to do. I guess I'm not going to do that. I'm now officially in the stoppage. I'm officially in the stoppage, Gary. I hope you're happy about that, because there I am looking at the Creedmoor Amateur Radio Club. So my little factoid about Rhode Island is something called left turn yield.
That sounds like something they need down in Florida, but what is left turn yield?
You know how if you come to stop sign, four-way intersection, you're supposed to use the right-of-way rule?
Yes, yes. Oncoming traffic, vehicle to the right, first vehicle that got there, if it's a tie, the one who's going straight wins, that kind of stuff?
Now, all vehicles are going straight when you apply the right-of-way rule, except in Rhode Island. In Rhode Island, these people use the wrong side of their brain, and if you have two cars approaching an intersection head-on, and one of them is making a left turn and the other one is going straight, these interesting group of human beings yield to the left turn person, which causes many, many accidents with people from out of state who do not drive that way.
So you're saying a person turning left at an intersection with two vehicles facing each other has the right of way?
Not on the books. It's not a traffic law. It's not in the VTL. But it's what they do. And it causes lots of problems for out-of-state drivers. It was one little factoid that my accident prevention course instructor 2 weeks ago made a very big point of bringing up. If you ever drive in Rhode Island, be prepared for it, because the only way that it can be surmised as how this whole thing came about is because she said, who is it that you learn how to drive from? Who is it that teaches you how to drive? It's your parents. If your parents are always speeding around, zooming, cutting people off this way, that's the way you're going to learn to drive. parents are doing stupid things like left turn yield, that's what you're going to learn how to drive. And it's perpetuated itself through the generations. Enter BBN.
Well, I'm speechless. The only logic I can think of to that rule would be that it might have originally been to prevent backups of traffic, since if you have heavy opposing traffic and someone's trying to make a left turn and there's a lot of traffic coming in the opposite direction, they'll never be able to make their left turn and everything will back up behind them. But I'm not sure why that would be so important.
There is no logic, rhyme, or reason. It's just something that you have to be prepared for in the event that you ever drive in Rhode Island. And that was, if my daughter decides to go to Johnson in Wales, I will have to hammer this little factoid into her brain, because she was never taught to drive anywhere near yielding to someone making a left turn in front of her. So we will work on that one so that I can hopefully prevent any unpleasantness that she might ever exhibit from their stupidity.
Okay, here's another factoid. The following four vehicles all arrive at an intersection at the same time. Police, fire,
truck, post office,
a mail truck, sirens on. Who has the right of way? Maury?
The mailman.
Mailman.
Oh, well. Thought you guys would get caught on that one.
You fool me, I'm a moron.
Yeah, the mail must go through.
There's some of those tractor-trailer drivers that drive the bulk third-class advertisement mail. Drive, you would think that they took that quite literally, as they could break every law in the book.
Well, the stuff they're carrying is important. The TV guide has to be delivered.
Not to mention all of those brochures and pamphlets for North Shore Animal League. Adopt a kitten.
Hey, have you guys been getting a rash of advertising phone calls on your cell phone?
Yes.
One or two, but I'm on the do not call list on my cell phone, too.
Yeah, sometimes I think that do not call list is the list that the advertisers use to call because they have confirmed telephone numbers.
So what are your advertisements being advertised to your cell phone? And I finally passed the blockade over here. So what kind of advertisements are you getting calls for, Gary?
I don't know, because as soon as I realize what it is, I hang up.
Play with the person? You don't want to, like, you know, jerk them around? Make them waste their time?
Nah, I usually do that when I'm on the house phone, not the cell phone.
So I fixed my flagpole yesterday. It's back up and flying.
Okay. How'd you splice it back together? Did it crack?
When we had the high winds 2 weeks ago or whatever, it snapped. So I was contemplating a new one, and then I just decided to fix this one. I used exhaust pipe. I made a new sleeve out of exhaust pipe. Drilled and riveted it to the section that lost the inner compressed sleeve piece, and used my pipe expander to get it to the right size so it's a nice snug fit, and added a bushing, restrung it. Everything is glorious. I even made new clips to attach the flags to, so it'll be a little more better. Back up and flying proud. up, and I'll probably put up, I guess, before the end of the year, is a telescopic sectional rated for 95 miles an hour. If we got wings that high, I would advise removing the flag. Well, the 60-mile-an-hour gusts with the two flags on the pole were a little bit too much for it.
Do you have the flag illuminated at night? I know you no longer have to do that, but it's a nice touch.
The trench, it's N2PPN. That flag is right near a streetlight, so it is illuminated at night. Well, the one in the backyard, I actually have a solar-powered spotlight on.
Maury, no comments?
I have my flag on a bracket on the side of the house, and the only problem I have with it is that it frequently will wrap around the pole. The little swingy things get stuck sometimes, but I keep it out pretty much all the time, and you're right, as long as it's weatherproof, you don't have to take it in out of the rain anymore. So we have a very, very display-ish block. Everybody's got their flag flying.
Well, I spend the money for the Ann and Tuftex heavy-duty commercial industrial flags, and those are the U.S. ones. Unfortunately, it's hard to find the commercial version, the heavy-duty version for the U.S. Army flags, but I've found a supplier, and I always usually have at least one in reserve for when one gets a little frayed and or tattered. I swapped that one out, and I have a big collection of ones that I don't know what to do with. So at least once a year to twice a year I'm swapping them out. I had been flying a 4th Infantry flag when my son was in the 4ID, but now he's with the 2nd Infantry Support Battalion to the Korean blah blah blah, and they don't really have a flag, and the 229th Signal Battalion that he's in also doesn't really have a flag. So when they come out with a flag, they'll fly one of those.
There's a company called Medals of America that sells all kinds of military paraphernalia, and I'm pretty sure they sell those flags. Not the the specialized one, but they I'm sure they sell the Army one. I know they sell the Navy one.
I don't have a problem finding those in the Air Force heavy-duty versions. Those I don't have a problem finding. And the only flag that I've found is worth its salt is the Annan Tuftex. Annan flags are fantastic flags, but the Tuftex one is guaranteed never to fade, and it is made to be flown outdoors, you know, 365 days a year. So it's got all the construction properties and stuff of being able to withstand being outdoors all the time. U.S. Tunzel, you still Garish? And I'm Jackie. Double. Tunzel, yes. He's in the noisy zone out there by some people call me Maurice Avenue. Okay, I'm back on the high ground. So, I will repeat. What do you do with your flags when they're too afraid to fly? That's a good question, because I have a fair amount of them that are becoming ornamental in nature, you know, but they do require some stitchery, and I'm trying to figure out what to do with them.
There is a specific procedure for retiring an American flag. ever interested, I can let you know.
I know that there are methods, the same way that you retire prayer books, there are specific methods of retirement.
Well, you could always find a local Boy Scout group. They would be interested in doing a planned retirement ceremony. But if you want to do it yourself, I can tell you how to do it.
You're too noisy right now to tell me how to do it, so we'll have to make that Thursday's conversation.
I'm about to climb another hill.
All right, so I'm sure Maury would like to learn as well.
Oh, there's more than one way, but the way I see it is you raise it up to the top of the flagpole, lower it detached, and then it's a matter of burning the flag, but you don't burn it whole. You cut the blue field out, douse it with lighter fluid, set that on fire, and then you add the stripes in either the whole flag at once or one stripe at a time. There's more than one way of doing it.
Because the flag is to be considered as a living entity. It's not to be considered as a piece of cloth. And the only way to burn it is to dismember the body.
I'm back.
Okay. I'm going into the tunnel, so if you want to know more about it, we'll talk Thursday. And Tuesday, to be clear.
Watch a YouTube video on it. Maury, and SPPN.
I had to turn the volume down because I got a phone call, but I caught the last part of that. And as I recall, back in the 60s, early 70s, in the Boy Scouts, we used to have an annual collection of used and weathered flags, and we would actually ceremoniously bury them.
That's the other way to retire a flag, a burial. Like I said, it's considered to be a living entity, and that was the way it was to be treated.
I agree. Well, I do actually have a few in my garage that are not fit for flying, but I certainly wouldn't dispose of them in a disrespectful manner, so I may end up packing them up and taking them with me to either Florida or Vermont, depending on whether this wife stays with me or not.
Yes, I have a few too. The ones that are still presentable come out for the appropriate holidays, Flag Day, Memorial Day, Veterans Day, Labor Day, when I usually bring out all the bunting and all the other stuff and I decorate up the house in all patriotic colors. So I have a couple of huge 7x9 flags that I hang from the gutters of the house across the garage and stuff like that, so wind up definitely showing my patriotic spirit.
Do you have a Blue Star flag flying also?
Blue Star? No. I do not have a Blue Star flag flying.
Yes, back when I was out of the country, one of my kids put one up in the front window, but my wife decided to take it down because she had a concern about advertising that I was away.
That's a legitimate concern. Yeah, you don't necessarily want to turn around and say, head of the household was away, come and, you know, bother us.
Oh yeah, one period of time in Stony Brook, the fire, I don't belong to Stony Brook anymore, but they must have had five guys in at one time. and they had to go get a special flag made with five stars, which they flew, which I thought was interesting and inspirational. So thank God everybody got back okay.
I did make my son promise that every single time that he is in service, I would keep a flag flying in front of the house and display his brand. So I've been trying to hold up to that one, so we'll keep it going. He's out and retired, then I'll just keep up just the American flag.
Yeah, it sounds like a good deal. Good deal for you there. So he's going to make it a career then? He's going to put in his 20?
Over the past few days, we've been talking a lot. And he's starting to think that he wants to do something else. He wants to do something else when he gets out. And it'll probably be in about a year. He'll stick around and do his full time and not cut his time short, and thinking about the school that he's looking into, the GI Bill and everything else, and what that'll cover, and he can go back to school and do what he wants to do.
Okay, that sounds good. I was always a reservist, and you know, sometimes when I look back at the time I did go on active duty, I kind of regretted that I didn't make it a career at the time. But, you know, we all go different paths. I was just happy to be able to have the experience for the time I did. And, you know, I was impressed with the guys that came in young, did a full 20, and, you know, they didn't do it just for the benefits, but the benefits certainly are something to look at.
He's actually considering becoming a veterinarian.
Okay, well that's good. Does he have college already? Did he do any of the pre-med requirements?
He's got a good deal of his gen ed and stuff from one college that'll be able to train. Was looking at some of the college websites that he's interested in attending. So he'll have to start, pretty much start from the bottom. He's got to figure out whether or not the GI Bill will turn around and be able to cover him for that entire nut.
Okay, well, I know, I'm sure the GI Bill will cover him for the college part, but one thing you ought to check into is, I don't know if they have it for veterinary, but for human medicine, they have an enlisted to officer program for USIS, which is the Uniformed Services University down at Bethesda, where enlisted folks can actually apply for commissioning and then get assigned there. And they also have a HPST, Health Professions Scholarship Program, but then you have to give back a certain number of years on active duty when you're done.
Talk to Alfred now, his career counselor there. One of the things is that he will stay reservist so that he'll be able to, I think that ups some of his benefits by staying reservist. And he's looking into it. He's looking into it. I could run the USIS stuff and ask him if he inquired about any of that. I don't know whether they do it for animal medicine, but he could look into it and see what happens. But he says, I don't like people. I hate people, so I want to deal with animals. And he's always had a love for animals. He worked at a local pet store for quite a number of years while he was going to college and before that. So we'll see what happens.
WB2MSD. Yeah, well, good luck to him. And I knew a couple of people that were Army animal, I forget what their official, I think they were called veterinary technicians, that worked with the Army working dogs. And two of them that I know actually went on and went to vet school. And, you know, I'm assuming they made careers of it. I was gone by the time they got done with that. But the it seems like all the working dogs were under Army jurisdiction. I don't think Navy had too many of those details going on. They all seem to be Army, but they all seem to enjoy their work.
Yeah, he looked into that. If he turned around and reached for another 3 years and changed jobs and went for that job of vet tech, it wouldn't advance him along in his schooling any more than if he got enrolled in a regular veterinary college and stole the courses and programs and stuff there. So it's not like it would gain him anything, and he would wind up getting pushed back by almost a year if he had to take the three-year re-up. So he was looking into that also, and he wouldn't be any further along in attaining his goal because of the fact that he would still have to be doing all that stuff. So because I ran that one by him too. I said, why don't you just re-up for a minimum term and change jobs and become a vet tech? He's like, wouldn't do it good. He said, would turn around and push me back